It's time now for Visit Moffitt County, a community affairs program, an informative show on everything that's going on in and around Moffitt County, made possible by Blizzard Broadcasting. Now here's your host, Tom Kleinschnitz.
Welcome to Visit Moffitt County. This program is a public service announcement opportunity provided by Blizzard Communications. We are grateful for this time for Northwest Colorado citizens to get up to date in what's happening in Moffitt County. As always, remember, we are 5,000 watts and sound like a million. I serve as your host today. My name is Tom Kleinschnitz. I currently am Director of Tourism for Moffitt County. I have the pleasure of speaking to three individuals today. First, we have Cindy Wright with Wild Horse Warriors. Then we'll have Dan Johnson with Dinosaur National Monument. And then we'll wind up with Sue Mock with Northwest Colorado Field Museum. Cindy, are you with us?
Good morning. I'm here.
Beautiful. Welcome. I am really happy to have you here today. In case people don't know you, Cindy, tell us about you and how you ended up in Northwest Colorado.
Well, I was actually born in Northwest Colorado. I was born in Steamboat Springs quite a few years ago, and so I'm a native. Family's been around for, well, since the 1800s in the area. So, been around here a long time.
Great. Well, I think that's a testament to some of your knowledge of the area and the fact that you're a wonderful guide. I've heard lots of great things about how you do things out there. Tell us about Wild Horse Warriors and your tours in San Wash Basin.
Well, Wild Horse Warriors for San Wash Basin has an MOU with the BLM for range management out in San Wash Basin. We believe that we have to have a healthy land to have healthy wild horses. And once we got our MOU with the BLM asked us if we would consider doing tours. They feel, and we agree, that the tours are very educational for the public, and we have a lot of conversations and share lots of information, and we have a lot of insight into how the public is viewing the controversy with the wild horses. They're a lot of fun.
Well, I tell you, there's obviously a lot of controversy with the horses, and I think there's, you know, a lot of people come down on lots of different sides, and we've talked, and it sounds like, you know, there's a management plan in place out there, and you guys work with the BLM and work to keep at those management numbers, right?
Right. San Wash Basin Wild Horse Advocate Team has an MOU for the actual management of the wild horses, but we work and support each other in what we're doing out there. And, you know, we just understand after being through the drought and the lack of growth of vegetation that the land can only sustain so much, and we have to work with the BLM. They are the mandated managers of the wild horses, so we just have to work with them and try to make it work for everybody that's out there, because the San Wash Basin isn't just for the horses. It's a multi-use area, so you have hunting, and you have sheeping allotments, and you have dirt bikers and people that go out to look for rocks and birds, and, you know, it's open public land, so there's multiple uses out there, and we all have to work together to make it beneficial for everybody.
Well, I really appreciate you bringing up the other uses out in the basin, because I think there's a lot of different interests that need to weigh in on public lands, and I do communicate, and sometimes on social media at Visit Moffitt County, run into people that believe that the horses should be out there unabated and have unlimited numbers, and I think your approach and your group's approach is to work toward having healthy management. Is that correct?
Well, you know, I think almost all of us would love it if it was considered a horse range and the horses were the priority out there. But that's not what it is. And, you know, there's a lot of history with how San Wash Basin became a designated herd management area. And a lot of it goes back to the Homestead Law and the Taylor Grazing Act. And we all have to be conscientious of the other uses. And we've got greater sage grouse out there. And I think as we get older, we understand more the importance of keeping the land healthy. But that also means it has to be healthy for the elk and the deer and the sage grouse. You know, and we've got water rights out there that are shared with the allotment or permit holders. you know, so
right, the ag,
it's a complex issue.
Right, the ag permittees have some water out there also. You've told me about
right.
some challenges that are going on with regarding gates and being left open, and how much of a problem is this, and how can people help when they go out to the basin?
Well, you know, most of us around here, we're born and raised around ranch country, and we know that if you go through a gate and it's closed, you close the gate behind you. You don't wait 10 or 15 minutes, you close that gate. I wish that the people that were in the herd management area would close gates. We right now are looking at, I don't know, maybe 60, maybe more of our wild horses. They're outside of the perimeter of the herd management area. We found 4 or 5 new bands out within the last 10 days, and this is hunting season. So we assume there's hunters in there that are leaving gates open. And we just, it's hard to get those horses back in, and we need the gates closed. If you go out, close the gate.
Yeah, it's really simple. Anybody that's been around this end of the world understands that you encounter a closed gate, you close it when you go through. My goodness, I'm sorry to hear that there are some bands out, and I know that can cause some conflicts with private landowners.
Right. Well, and for us, you know, when those horses are out of the herd management area, the protocol for the BLM to do a gather for those that are out of bounds is entirely different than when they're within the herd management area. So it's dangerous for the horses to be out of the herd management area, especially if they get onto private land.
Well, I understand the Bureau of Land Management recently did a horse count in Sandwash Basin. In general, how did they find the condition of the basin? And can you kind of characterize the numbers that they came up with?
Well, I think actually the condition of the basin is, I would call it fabulous. It may not be fabulous like it was, you know, 50 years ago, but it's certainly amazing considering the drought that we went through and the recovery that we're having from it. So the basin itself is in pretty good condition. We've got water in almost every water source. We've got water in washes that normally are dry. It's a little frustrating for some of the visitors because they would like to come and find horses at a water source to make it easier to find them. But because there's lots of vegetation and lots of water, you actually have to go look for the horses, and they don't necessarily come in to the same water source every day. They're moving around a lot better. And that's, you know, the movement itself is really good for the land because there's less damage in one area if any type of wildlife, whether it's horses or sheep or cattle or anything, if they're moving, there's less damage to the area than if they're congregated in one area. The BLM's flyover said that they found about 344 wild horses and that about 60 of those wild horses that they found when they did their flyover in the end of October were out of bounds. We think there's some additional horses out of bounds since then due to the gates being left over.
I see. What is the target number that BLM would like to see in the basin?
The high AML, which is an appropriate management level, is 362. So we are actually right in the management level that the BLM would like to see us in.
Great. Well, that's good news. On another issue, I understand the Colorado legislature passed Senate Bill 2375 last year establishing a wild horse commission. I'm not sure if I have that right, the name correct, but are you a member of that commission? And tell us about that commission.
Yeah, it's the Colorado Wild Horse Project. And yes, I have been appointed to represent Wild Horse Warriors on that. Alisa Dove, my sister, will be the alternate. And then Sandwash Basin Wild Horse Advocate Team also has a member. So each one of the herd management areas or the horse range has a member. So there's 5 members from the herd management areas that are on this Wild Horse Project. And then within the Wild Horse Project, there's a group called the Wild Horse Working Group, which is where we're actually at. And that was given to the Colorado Department of Agriculture to manage. And we had our first meeting in October. Our second meeting is November 13th and 14th at the Colorado Department of Agriculture. And you can check it out on their website. It is live streamed and there was public comment period, and it is a public meeting. And it's really trying to find, bringing a lot of different people in from a lot of different interest groups and trying to help Colorado find a better way and a healthier way to manage the wild horses that are here. For San Wash Basin, we've been given $73,000 by the state of Colorado to do on-range projects in San Wash Basin. Most of those will be repairs to water sources. So we're anxious to get a hold of that money and start making some repairs.
Well, great. The commission actually has some monies to accomplish some things. That sounds like at least a good start. Could you also tell us about the Wild Horse Refuge near Lake Colorado and your relationship with that outfit, and maybe tell us a little bit about what's happening there?
Yeah, so Pat Craig, the founder of the Wild Animal Sanctuary in Kingsburg, Colorado, was approached by our governor and multiple other people and asked if he could help with the horses that were being removed from San Wash Basin in 2021. And through the process, he bought 22,000 acres north of Lay, and he has opened the Wild Horse Refuge there. There are tours available. He's got, I don't know exactly the numbers, but he's got about 100 of the San Wash Basin wild horses out there that he purchased or were adopted through the BLM adoption program. This refuge will be for Colorado wild horses only. He does have a few horses down in Springfield at his other sanctuary that are not necessarily Colorado wild horses. So Pat Craig has really stepped up and tried to help us find some answers for some of our horses, because the adoption, they're kind of flooded. You know, there's just a lot of wild horses for adoption. And this gives, a lot of horses a chance to really roam free just 30 or 40 miles from where they came from. I've been doing some volunteer work for him. He's got another tour guide that's doing tours for him, and he's got a ranch manager out there. And it's just really amazing that, you know, he's stepped forward, and this is all through donations. He doesn't get grants from the state or from other federal places. It's all public donations that helps him provide this for the horses. And it's just really incredible, I think.
Well, it sounds like the refuge is certainly something new, and obviously just came into Moffat County this year, so it's brand new, and I think it's an opportunity to help the situation. What else should people know about wild horses in Moffat County?
Well, you know, they've been here a long time, and they're going to be here for a long time. You know, we're in the fall now, so the roads out there are a little iffy, and a lot of times we cannot get in during the winter. But, you know, it's on public land, and there are tours available, but it's also open to the public. You can just go out and drive around and find them. You need to stay 100 feet away from them and not harass them, but it's a pretty amazing sight when you can go out and see the wild horses running free, and they're healthy, and it's a beautiful sight out there.
Well, beautiful. Well, if people would like to know more about the wild horse tours or more about San Wash Basin, do you have a website that you can point people toward?
Yeah, they can just go to wildhorsewarriorsforsandwashbasin.com and check us all out. There's a tour page, but there's a lot of other information on there that will give a lot of insight to the projects that we've done or that we are doing out there. There's a lot of pretty interesting pictures about the drought and the drought situation that we struggled, and the water that we provided while we were doing our water hauling and during the drought for, you know, the last several years, and lots of links to other places for more information.
Well, great. You know, one thing about I enjoy about the site too is there's some wonderful photography on the site that really shows the horses that are out there, and it's just fun to take a look at your photography as it adds up on that site.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Cindy, for joining us today. We'll be taking a short break. Our next guest will be Dan Johnson with the National Park Service.
We'll be back with more Visit Moffitt County, an informative show on everything that's going on in and around Moffitt County, made possible by Blizzard Broadcasting and heard right here on KRAI Craig, 55 Country at 550 AM and 105.1 FM, and on KRAI FM at 102.3 and 93.7.
Hi, this is Savannah, the Comb Goddess, now with Salon LaRose, a full-service salon offering hair, skin, and nails. We are excited to bring you micro-needling facials with Gretchen Baumgartner. Come see us today at Salon LaRose, downtown in the Victoria Building on the second floor.
Take some boneless pork and barbecue sauce, add some onions and pickles, and put it on a hoagie bun, and you have a McRib sandwich, now back at McDonald's for a limited time. That's right, the McRib is back at McDonald's. Your days just got better because now you can enjoy McRib. But hurry, it's only here for a short time. McRib at McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Hi, this is Megan Stetson with CSU Extension in Northwest Colorado. Fall is upon us, and today I'm going to talk about fall and winter watering from mid-October through March. Winters often come with strong winds, dry air, fluctuating temperatures, and the occasional spell with no snow on the ground. These conditions, coupled with limited rainfall in the summer, can quickly deplete subsurface soil moisture. This can damage trees, shrubs, grasses, and perennials if they don't receive additional water, especially in times of drought. Signs of stress may not be noticed right away, but the plant's weakened immune system can lead to disease and insect problems down the line. Plants that aren't fully established or have a shallow root zone are more susceptible to winter injury. During winter, the roots are active, providing nutrients to the tree while above ground, the tree is dormant. On average, in Colorado, snow provides about 1 inch of water per foot, which isn't enough water for those trees through the winter. Keep an eye on the snowfall, and if 4 weeks have lapsed with no snow cover, water those plants. Water when the air and soil temperature is above 40 degrees after leaves have started to fall. The best time of day to water is midday, so the water has time to soak into the ground before the night freeze. A slow and steady soak is best. Apply water under the branches of the tree, all the way out to the drip line and beyond. A rule of thumb is that for each inch in diameter of tree trunk, that tree should get 10 gallons of water. For example, a tree with a 2-inch diameter trunk will need 20 gallons, or roughly 20 to 30 minutes per spot, 1 to 2 times per month, depending on the snowfall. Newly planted trees, shrubs, and grasses may require more water. If you have questions, please reach out to your local extension office or check out Colorado State University's many fact sheets on fall and winter watering at extension.colostate.edu or visit planttalk.colostate.edu. This has been Megan Stetson with Moffitt County Extension.
The best way to feel love is to share it. This holiday season, Subaru is continuing to share the love during the 2023 Subaru Share the Love event. And Cook Subaru in Steamboat Springs is proud to be a participating retailer once again. Through programs like Share the Love and Subaru Love Promise, Cook has partnered with Subaru and our local organizations to make a positive impact in important areas such as environment, community, health, education, as well as pets. Now through January 2nd, when you get a new Subaru from Cook, Subaru will donate $250 to your choice of charity partners, the ASPCA, Make-A-Wish, Meals on Wheels, the National Park Foundation, or our very own local charity, the United Way of the Yampa Valley. So whatever your passion is, now is the time of year to get a great vehicle and support a great cause. The Subaru Share the Love event. Learn more at Cook Subaru on West Highway 40 in Steamboat Springs, or catch us online at cooksubaru.com.
Hi, this is Robbie Shine, Howlison Hills Slope Foreman, talking to you today about REPS, Reaching Everyone Preventing Suicide. REPS offers 5 confidential and complimentary counseling sessions with a licensed therapist to anyone in our community who is struggling. Call 970-846-8182 or email reps at repssteamboat@gmail.com. We all love steep and deep 15-inch powder days with face shots, but when your life throws a boilerplate day at you and you can't get your edges in, dial 988 if you are in crisis.
Are you excited for ski season, but your legs feeling a little bit rusty? Or maybe this year was the year that you wanted to pick up some extra skills on the mountain. Steamboat Snow Sports School is offering a huge deal for adult Icon pass holders with an early season pass holder 3-pack. Take 3 group lessons any day before December 16th and save big. The 3-pack can be purchased for $2.99 in person at the ticket office. Open weekdays or on site November 25th during the season launch party in Steamboat Square. Lessons are transferable and can and be shared with friends.
The selling price has been reduced on one of the most beautiful homes in Craig. Book a showing today to see 610 Taylor Street, a sprawling 1928 beauty with over 3,800 square feet, four bedrooms, three baths, formal dining room with butler's pantry, built-ins, amazing patio, and a beautiful backyard. Located in walking distance to downtown, this is a must-see. Call Country Living Realty in Craig.
We list, we sell, we treat you well. 8240223 Country Living Realty.
It's time now for Visit Moffitt County, a community affairs program, an informative show on everything that's going on in and around Moffitt County, made possible by Blizzard Broadcasting. Now here's your host, Tom Kleinschnitz.
We're back with Visit Moffitt County and have Dan Johnson with Dinosaur National Monument. Thank you for joining us today, Dan.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here today.
Let's see. Dinosaur National Monument is the number one attraction for Moffitt County as far as people coming to visit our region. It's in a very important place. Tell us about what's your title and what's your job duties there at the monument?
Well, I am the program manager for interpretation, education, and visitor services at the monument. And so basically, it's, when you think about what I sort of lead up and do, it's the folks that staff our visitor centers, do the ranger-guided programs. We also work on a lot of things like exhibits, our website, social media. We also do the school programs when we have different school groups come and visit. We also do virtual field trips for visitors and school groups. So it's kind of all the sort of interface between the monument and our public.
Wonderful. Well, that's a big responsibility without question. Before we kind of tear into all the new things that are happening at the monument, can you tell us about yourself and your career at the Park Service and how you ended up in Dinosaur?
Sure. I mean, I've been working for the Park Service basically since 1990. I started out of college, actually, as a seasonal employee. I grew up in Virginia in the Shenandoah Valley, and I could actually see Shenandoah National Park from basically out my back door. So, and I grew up as a kid basically doing a lot of hiking and camping and stuff with my family as a kid. So I was very intrigued to kind of like work in sort of an outdoor setting. I started working seasonally for many years with the Park Service, moved around all over the country, worked a lot of different parks, and then eventually was able to get on as a permanent employee. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to work in places like Rocky Mountain National Park or Badlands or Olympic National Park out in Washington State. And so I actually arrived here in Utah at Dinosaur National Monument, Utah and Colorado, back in 2011, just before the Quarry Exhibit Hall and Quarry Visitor Center opened. And I have been here basically almost 13 years. So it's been a wonderful place to explore and experience and be able to work on a lot of different things. I mean, Dinosaur is such a great park with all the variety of resources, I mean, well beyond dinosaur bones, that people come here to experience.
And I really appreciate that. Obviously, most of Dinosaur National Monument is in Moffitt County, but the Wall of Bones is over in our neighboring county in Uinta County near Jensen, Utah. But I appreciate, you know, your enthusiasm for the entirety of the monument. I understand there's a lot of construction at the visitor center that's associated with the quarry this winter. Can you tell us about that construction and how it'll affect visitor operations over the winter months?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Right now, we are actually doing a project at the main visitor center. So this is not affecting the quarry or the Wall of Bones. It's just our visitor center facility, which is about a quarter mile down the road. We're replacing an HVAC system, heating, ventilation, air conditioning system to basically provide a little bit better experience for visitors. What we were encountering was in the system that was put on there was meant to be very energy efficient originally, but it was having a lot of issues because it was using basically a big swamp cooler, dealing with like spikes in temperatures, particularly when we had kind of monsoonal events. And so that was creating some issues with the building. And so we're replacing that over the wintertime. So that will provide us, hopefully when visitors come in, it's happening over the wintertime. So trying to happen during our low visitation season when people come next year to experience, they'll actually experience a comfortable climate controlled building for both the public and for our staff who work in the building as well.
Well, my limited experience with swamp coolers is they sure don't work when humidity's high. So I'm sure that that was a huge part of the issue. But to emphasize, the Wall of Bones is open throughout the winter.
Right, that is correct. We're open basically 7 days a week. The only days that we are actually ever closed is Thanksgiving, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day. So any other time, you can come and see it. Just check our website for our current hours.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. Another project that I'm really interested in, and it's at the launch point for Lador trips up in the north end of the monument, is the Wade and Curtis Cabin that's been recently refurbished, rehabilitated. What happened there?
Yeah, it's a historic cabin on the National Register of Historic Places that a lot of people have driven by if they're launching on river trips from Gates of Lador. And it was definitely needing to be rehabilitated, restored, because, I mean, we were starting to see some deterioration in the cabin. So we were able to partner with the Historic Preservation Training Center. It's basically a group with inside of the National Park Service that actually works on a lot of historic structures and features that are contained within different park units. And they have a group of folks who have a lot of skills and background actually in working on historic cabins. So we were able to get funding and get their team lined up to come out this year. And they were able to do, you know, quite a bit of work, actually. I mean, one of the features that people might have noticed if they have been up there is that it has kind of what we call not a true sod roof when you think of with like the sod structures that are found out in the Midwest or prairie states, but it has a living roof. And so they basically completely replaced that roof because we were having some issues with leaking, and we were able to actually harvest some native plants and soils and stuff that had a good root structure and basically refurbish that. And then it was a lot of like daubing and chinking along the logs. A brand new floor went into that building. And one of the things we were actually able to work with the Colorado State Historic Preservation Office on was actually like putting in a new walkway to the building and modifying that cabin slightly on the doorway, just widening a little bit so that people in wheelchairs could actually like get inside of it in the future. So that was, again, one of the things. They retained all the original door materials and actually was able just to add basically a board to widen that a little, redid the windows. It's actually great. And so our next phase of that project, we're currently working on exhibits that will actually go inside of it and will be installed sometime probably towards the end of next summer or early fall. And so then the facility will be able to be open to the public with a primary aim of like interpreting the history and the geology and natural resources that you find in kind of that Gates of Lador, Canyon of Lador area, and particularly for folks that are going to launch on river trips. And we're also including some exterior exhibits that will be installed near the boat ramp, highlighting river safety and just, again, trying to get across some of the key messages about the resources in the monument and also how to enjoy their experience.
Well, great. You know, another really incredible part of the monument in Moffat County is the Harper's Corner Road. It's an incredible drive to the middle of canyon country. It's open only on a seasonal basis, but can you tell our listeners about that drive and maybe how the construction that was occurring this summer is finishing up and when it might be complete?
Yes, definitely. I mean, Harper's Corner Road is, as you mentioned, it is a wonderful drive. I mean, it's 31 miles each way, takes you to the several high points where you actually get views down into the canyon country. You can see down to the Green River, the Yampa River Canyons. At the very end, there's a short hike out to a viewpoint. Again, just stunning views that really give you an overview of what kind of that wildness of Dinosaur National Monument looks like. And one of the things that we were working on this year was a project in partnership with Federal Highways, and they have been basically redoing the entire 6 miles, the lower 6 miles, right after you turn off of Highway 40 of that road. When it was originally constructed, Harper's Corner Road was built fairly quickly back in the 1950s, early 60s. A lot of times they didn't develop or build a large roadbed for that, so we were always having issues, you know, when trying to plow snow out during the springtime to open it. Just the asphalt and the roadbed under it was so thin that if you took any kind of like heavy vehicles, heavy equipment on it, you could just like crack right through the asphalt and down into the road basin kind of sink. So, I mean, in some areas they've done, you know, significant excavation and rebuilt that roadbed up so that it will handle the conditions. And I was able to drive it actually just this past Sunday, that lower section, and it's just a much smoother, much nicer drive for that. And so they're redoing a couple of the viewpoints and overlook along that lower 6 mile section as well. And then we do have plans. We are continuing to work on adding new interpretive outdoor exhibits in some of those areas too.
Well, wonderful. Well, Harper's Corner is just a heck of an asset, and certainly to have a paved road that goes to such a spectacular overlook, I think is just an asset that we truly appreciate here in Moffat County. Let's get to other investments. I understand that there'll be a new operations center in the future near the town of Dinosaur, near the headquarters there. What do you know about the operations center? What happened to the old one? And where are we with that investment?
That's correct. It is a little bit of a future project. We're still kind of working on some planning. I mean, but it is kind of, it's in our line item construction list. So when exactly it will happen, there's still, that's moving back and forth, but we're kind of in the final stages for that. So our original operations center that was built back in like the 1950s, it sits just kind of behind where the headquarters and the Canyon Visitor Center area there is, 2 miles east of Dinosaur, Colorado. And that's where we had kind of like our fire operations was based out of it, our maintenance operations, like river operations also. So a lot of natural resource management operations based out of there. Fortunately, the building and the way that was constructed originally back in the 1950s, being this kind of open cinder block, had experienced a lot of cracking and stabilization issues, and we ended up moving out of that building, and it, because it was condemned as having some like serious structural issues. So we've been, you know, trying to get in line, get funding for a replacement of that building. And so it looks like that is moving forward, that will happen. So we'll be able right now, kind of, we've been using some temporary buildings and using like what is some of our park housing for employees, turn that into offices. So we'll be able to reconsolidate those operations back into that building. And it'll, again, provide just a really functional workplace for carrying out so many of the different aspects of work that we have to do in the monument. That's, you know, beyond just even the maintenance and like the interpretation education like I work in, but a lot of our resource management, and especially for our river program, that river rangers that are providing search and rescue services and different things that go on with the river.
Well, it certainly sounds like a significant investment here in the west end of our county, so we're much appreciated on that level. Another great project that we've been talking about for a few years is the film about the monument. Can you tell us about that film project and when the public will be able to see the new film?
Yes. I mean, the film has been a project I have been involved in for quite a period of time. We, again, you know, got funding for that project, and we're kicking it off right as COVID happened. So that kind of impacted and sort of moved our schedule back a little bit due to some travel restrictions that were going on. But we finally, you know, spent several years of filming, you know, got all 4 seasons. The project is actually complete. We just received our final deliverables of the film in early October. And a couple of things I will say, it's a film, it's basically a 15-minute film on the monument, provides a really nice overview, a lot of stunning scenery, and really explores all the different topics and different subject matters that you find here in the monument, the different resources. But it also, one of the key things we wanted to do with our film, and there are 5 short webisodes, short videos that go along with this film as well that expand into some of those different topic areas. But it meets all the accessibility requirements. So it's going to be captioned. We'll have audio description for people who are unsighted so they can actually still have an experience with the film. And one of the things we did with our film and webisodes is we actually also created a Spanish language version. So again, we could try to reach different audiences that come to the monument and expand on the folks that we are trying to reach there. So the film is done. We're kind of in the process right now of getting it like loaded up to our website, because the nice thing is it'll be available not just in our visitor center, but we'll also have it online so that people can watch it from wherever to learn about the monument. It's in 4K, so it's got really stunning high definition to it. And we're looking at basically probably a sort of a premiere kickoff here in January, right after the new year.
Well, we've gotten permission from Amy Updike at the West theater there in Craig to put it up in front of Craig citizens when it's available. So we'll make those arrangements.
Yep. Well, I'll definitely be in touch with you, Tom, and we will work out a date when we can come over. And because we had a lot of folks actually participate in this. One of the things, we included different voices and different stories, actually, from different people kind of around through the region here. And so I know that some of our boating community participated in this, and they are interested and excited to see it.
Well, what's the best way for visitors to find out more about the monument, or if they have any questions for you?
I think, you know, always the best thing is go to the monument website. So that's nps.gov, and then it's a /DINO for Dino. That's where we try to keep like all our things updated with current statuses of roads and campgrounds and also our operating hours. And we try to do updates and press releases and news releases there. There's also, if you want to learn a little bit more, the monument social media for those that participate in that. Usually you can just do the @DinosaurNPS. We're very active on Facebook and Instagram, a little bit still on X. And we do also have YouTube. And so, you know, a lot of our staff have created sort of short videos about different aspects of the monument that they posted on there. So those are the different avenues that you can find out. And of course, actually, if there's an immediate question you have, don't hesitate to give us a call. Our main number for the visitor center that's staffed daily is the 435-781-7700. So we're always happy to talk to folks. You can also email us too, of course, and that's dino_information@nps.gov.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, Mr. Johnson, for joining us today. We'll be taking a short break. Our next guest will be Sue Mock with the Field Museum right here in Moffat County.
We'll be back with more Visit Moffat County, an informative show on everything that's going on in and around Moffat County, made possible by Blizzard Broadcasting and heard right here on KRAI Craig, 55 Country at 550 AM and 105.1 FM, and on KRAI FM at 102.3 and 93.7.
Hi, this is Drew McElhinney from Harvey's Huddle and Steamboat Comedy. And making people laugh is what I love to do. But when the laughter stops and you need somebody to talk to, there's always somebody listening at REPS. REPS offers 5 confidential and complimentary counseling sessions with a licensed therapist to anyone in our community who is struggling. Call 970-846-8182 or email reps@repssteamboat@gmail.com. Or if in a crisis, dial 988.
This is Matt with Steamboat Roofing Company. As I see everyone out enjoying all the activities that Steamboat has to offer, just remember, ski season's right around the corner. We're still scheduling roof installs for this fall, so give us a call now to get on our schedule. We're easy to find online at steamboatroofing.com. That's steamboatroofing.com. See you out there.
The best way to feel love is to share it. This holiday season, Subaru is continuing to share the love during the 2023 Subaru Share the Love event. And Cook Subaru in Steamboat Springs is proud to be a participating retailer once again. Through programs like Share the Love and Subaru Love Promise, Cook has partnered with Subaru and our local organizations to make a positive impact in important areas such as environment, community, health, education, as well as pets. Now through January 2nd, when you get a new Subaru from Cook, Subaru will donate $250 to your choice of charity partners, the ASPCA, Make-A-Wish, Meals on Wheels, the National Park Foundation, or our very own local charity, the United Way of the Yampa Valley. So whatever your passion is, now is the time of year to get a great vehicle and support a great cause. The Subaru Share the Love event. Learn more at Cook Subaru on West Highway 40 in Steamboat Springs, or catch us online at cooksubaru.com.
Backdoor Sports, since 1986, your source for all Telmark backcountry and alpine touring in Northwest Colorado. Scarpa TX Pros and T2s for the Tele Bombers. Volley Fishcale skis for the folks going to Rabbit Ears or Buffalo Pass. Scarpa Mistrali and F1s for the alpine tourists. Beacons, probes, shovels for anything backcountry, and a great selection on everybody's favorite Big Agnes. Backdoor Sports, 9th and Yampa, downtown Steamboat Springs.
Hey, it's me, Gus the Gopher for Atmos Energy. Being a gopher, I like to dig. That's what us gophers were born to do, along with eating plants, taunting groundskeepers, and listening to bluegrass music. And I especially enjoy digging around the yard. Occasionally, I bump into a utility line and I get a headache. Ouch! After all, they're hard to miss since they can be buried anywhere. But if you hit one with your shovel, backhoe, or ditch digger, you could cause a gas leak, disrupt service, or worse. Makes me shake in my paws just thinking about it. You can avoid all of this by calling 811 at least 3 business days before you or someone else digs in your yard to have those underground utility-owned lines marked. Calling 811 will help protect your property, and more importantly, you. It's free, and it's the law. You dig what I'm saying? For more on safe digging, visit atmosenergy.com/811.
Hi, this is Susan Madigan with a message from Route County Public Health. The cooler weather brings all kinds of fun. Staying up to date on your COVID-19 and annual flu vaccines is a great way to stay healthy and enjoy all of the seasonal activities Route County has to offer. Route County Public Health is currently offering COVID-19 and flu vaccines. Both vaccines are available at no cost to those who qualify. Please visit the Route County Public Health website or call us at 970-870-5341 for more information or to schedule an appointment.
Steamboat Springs Transit is hiring bus drivers for regional bus service between Craig and Steamboat. The ideal candidate lives in Craig or Hayden, has a Class B CDL with passenger endorsement, or willing to be trained for this license. Regional bus drivers can work seasonally or full-time. Steamboat Springs Transit offers excellent full-time benefits, competitive pay and paid training, plus great employee perks like a flexible work schedule and free skiing. So grab the wheel. Visit the job page at steamboatsprings.net/SST jobs for more information and to apply.
Hi, this is Brent Cook with Cook Chevrolet, Subaru, and Ford. My family and I are proud to have been in the Yampa Valley for over 60 years now. You've supported us during that time and during the holidays. We want to remember all the local businesses that make up our amazing communities. Now through December 22nd, when you purchase any vehicle at Cook, you'll receive a $100 gift card to a local business of your choice. Visit Cook and Craig or Steamboat Springs to learn more, or you can look at cook-cars.com.
It's time now for Visit Moffitt County, a community affairs program, an informative show on everything that's going on in and around Moffitt County, made possible by Blizzard Broadcasting. Now here's your host, Tom Kleinschnitz.
Welcome back. This is Tom Kleinschnitz with Visit Moffitt County. We're joined now by Sue Mock with the Field Museum right here in Moffitt County. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, before we hear about the Field Museum, tell us more about yourself and how you came to be in this part of Colorado.
In 2014, I had had a bout with cancer, and I was exploring my opportunities, and I decided to pick a point on the map, and that point happened to be Craig, Colorado. And so I came here to Craig, and when I got here, I found the Field Museum, and that's where I began my career, and I've been with the Field Museum since March of 2015.
Wow. Northwest Colorado was the point on the map that made it for you. Wonderful.
Correct.
Welcome to Colorado's great Northwest. Tell us about your position with the Field Museum.
I've moved up through the ranks. When I got here, I was able to pet a piece of Walter's skin. Walter is our dinosaur here at the museum. And when I got to pet that, I said, how do I get here to be in with Walter and work with him? And Liz told me, the paleontologist at the time, told me I needed to take schooling. So I went ahead and took some schooling, and I went from being a preparator in a class to now being the interim curator here at the museum.
Well, wonderful. Well, the Field Museum is obviously pinned at paleontology, but you went by something kind of quick there. How about that dinosaur skin? And how rare is that to find something like that?
If you find dinosaur skin, it's more than likely a hadrosaur, and Walter happens to be a hadrosaur, and so we've got lots of skin. And one of our mottos here is come pet the dinosaur, because we allow visitors to come in and actually touch the dinosaur skin and actually get the feel of it and see what it's like.
Well, great. Well, I understand the Field Museum is open to the public, so can you tell us exactly where the museum is and when you're open?
So if you come into Craig, we're on 9th Street in Craig, Colorado, and we're located right across from the hospital, and we are located in the Colorado Northwestern Community College. They actually are allowing us to use some of their space, and you can come in here on Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 2, and we'll give you a tour of the place, and you actually get to come into the repository and actually get to see the specimens we're working on. You can come to the museum during the school hours when the school is open and view the exhibits in Dinosaur Hall and Science Hall. But in order to get in the repository, it has to be on the weekend.
Great. Well, I think that opportunity is wonderful. And a lot of people, frankly, don't know about it, even though that you've been putting out information about it. So every weekend, there's something for people in Moffat County and Craig to go up and see the Field Museum. Are you the person there?
Right now, I am the docent. We have a very limited staff, so I am the docent. And I always try and find something that appeals to each individual. Some people come in and go, well, I'm not really into dinosaurs. Well, then I show them the rocks. And everyone walks away with something exciting and fun to share with their fellow people.
Well, I think just the fact that you can get in and touch this stuff is amazing. Now, the fact is this is a national registered repository, and I understand that's significant. What criteria did he need to go through to have an authorized repository?
So the Colorado Northwestern Field Museum is actually one of only two community college-related repositories, federal repositories, in the nation. The other one happens to be in Casper, Wyoming. What we have to do is we had to apply through Bureau of Land Management, and they ended up granting us repository status, saying we are allowed to house fossils that are found here in Northwest Colorado, and we get to house them here and keep them for public safety and make sure that future generations are able to view these specimens that we have here.
Well, great. Now, I understand that the Colorado Northwestern Community College had a paleo dig program this summer. Tell us about the people that participated in that program, approximately where it is. It's in Moffat County, I understand. Tell us about the actual field portion of what's happening with paleo.
So every year, Colorado Northwestern Community College offers a two-week place where you can go in and actually get college credit to go out and dig dinosaur bones. These dinosaur bones that they dig up are actually where the museum gets all of its collections, and so it's really a very important part of our system. The individuals get to come out. I think we had a crew of 10 out this year, and they brought us two different specimens that we've been able to extract. They're both, once again, unique specimens.
Sounds like the find might be significant. I've heard it's characterized to be possibly a wall of bones that would be similar to the wall that's over on the west end of Dinosaur National Monument in the very curated visitor center over there. Is that still a possibility that it's as big or maybe even bigger than that display?
It may even be bigger than dinosaur. We are just now scratching the surface. We're getting out the bones that are getting weathered and that are starting to break down because of all the millions of years that they've been exposed to the weather. The wall itself that we're working on appears to be where like a large guy with a 9-foot rib fell into like a crevice and blocked up the water and had a whole bunch of other specimens dam up behind him, building this great big wall full of bones.
Wow. It sounds like a great potential and something that would be very meaningful to Moffat County. Now, I understand the Field Museum has recently formed a new board of directors. Can you tell me about who's involved with the new board and how they might be contributing to the Field Museum?
This was an exciting thing that happened to us, was the getting the board. We've been trying since 2015 to actually get a board, and we now have a board of members. They range in, I have my former curator is one of my board members. The curator, Julie McHugh, over in Fruta, which is our backup repository. So if something happened and we lost our repository status, they would get our specimens. She is on our board, which is really, really fantastic because we have input for our future. Whether, you know, we would ever need it, but at least we have that to go by. We have Jerry Blount, one of our field crew members that has been with the field crew for over 5 years. He's on our board, so he's bringing in the field crew side. We have Ed Kacharik here in town. He's bringing the public side. So our board is very diverse. I've got East Coast, West Coast, and Midwest individuals. I even have someone that said, yeah, I like to write grants.
Well, with any organization, you've got somebody who puts up their hand and says they want to help with that aspect, I'm sure it will be very well received. Tell us about how is the Field Museum funded and what's CNCC's role in your funding mechanism?
Those are some good questions, Tom. CNCC allowed us to be here and has worked with the various community foundations and things along these lines to get us grants, to get us equipment, field gear, numerous different things. They offer the paleo lab techniques class, which you can come in and get 3 credits to work on dinosaur bones here in the lab and actually prep out things, and then the 2 weeks out in the field. And then we put those two together, and you get a paleo designator on your associate of science, which is an exciting thing. And that can be a draw because that can be something that's really big when you start to go into or further paleo careers. You can use that, and it's like, hey, I have this little foundation, and it's great.
Well, great. I mean, it sounds like things are coming together. I think there's some exciting finds out there in the county, but it all takes organization back in the home base, and it sounds like that's coming together in a very strong way. Are you looking for other supporting organizations or partners in the area or beyond?
We are always looking for partners. We are not currently a 501c3, so the donations in that are actually run through our support group, so to speak, our partner, our associate, the Friends of Natural History. And what they do is any funding coming in, they will be able to process it for us. Other than that, we're always looking for partners. We need equipment all the time. Things get wore out. We've been running since we opened in 2015. We have never ran in the red. Anything we have gotten has been through donations or grants.
Well, we always appreciate an organization that doesn't run itself into a bad place. So it sounds like you've got a good group of people coming together and doing some strong things to make it a long-term investment in what goes on. When we look at something like the Field Museum and take a broader view, can we just, you know, at 20,000 feet looking down, why is this an important asset for our community?
For Craig, this is really a really important aspect because we are able to, the fossils that are found here in Northwest Colorado get to stay in Northwest Colorado. When we found Walter in 2015, which Walter is the dinosaur that got the whole museum started, when we found him, we had choices of calling up like out of state or over to Denver and getting someone to do this or to open your own repository. We opened our own repository so that way the things found in Northwest Colorado get to stay here. So if it's found in Moffat County, it gets to stay in Moffat County. We also cover Rio Blanco and Garfield counties also.
Well, I understand that's been the issue in some of these finds, that they're excavated and carted off to other states or other countries. So I think that having something that we can keep in our community and keep our heritage and what we have right here is obviously a huge important thing. And we appreciate your work on all of that. What else should people know about the Field Museum that we haven't touched on?
It's an exciting place to come and visit. Like I say, you get to actually come in and touch bones. Normally, when you go into any kind of a natural history museum, you go in and most of the exhibits are replicas and things like that. But with our museum here, we actually take you down in the repository and you get to see actually hands-on what we are doing in the lab currently instead of just looking through a glass window. And I think that makes us really special. And there is no cost.
There is no cost. That's a big one. And I also understand.
We encourage donations. Please donate. But there is no cost. Anytime you come in, there is no cost.
And if someone had a special group or something that they were gathering and were going to be there at other than a time on a weekend, is it possible for somebody to contact you and be able to open up and have a bit of a viewing of what's there?
Most definitely. We have a couple different options on that. We have one where you can bring your group into the museum and we just schedule time and you can bring them in. We do the full tour, do activities, things along those lines. Or we have the other option of the traveling trunk. And what that is where we actually bring the exhibits to like a classroom. And we basically give the students a museum experience without having to leave the classroom. And either one of those you can arrange by getting in contact with me here at CNCC. And I don't know if you want my phone number yet.
That's exactly what we're looking for right now. If you have a website or phone numbers, contact information to follow up on our discussion today, and then, you know, possibly people that have special groups or somebody that wants to make sure that things are open and they want to invest the time to come and visit.
So the best way to reach me is at Suzanne, Suzanne, .mock at cncc.edu. That's the website. And then my phone number here at the office is 970-824-1129. I'm not in my office a lot, but I do get back with my messages as quick as I can.
Well, I understand you have some teaching duties and crazy things like that you're in the middle of.
And my favorite thing is preparing, actually getting down and working on the dinosaur bones.
Well, great. Well, Sue, thank you for joining us today. It's been a very important discussion. I trust that many of our listeners will get in contact with you and do some follow-up. Thank you.
This is exciting, Tom, and thank you for inviting me. Everyone have a wonderful day.
Great. Thank you. This was the sixth edition of Visit Moffat County. If you or your organization would like to participate in future broadcasts, contact me at the Moffat County Tourism Association in Craig. That number is 970-824-2335. Information on Moffat County, including important upcoming events, can also be found online at visitmoffattcounty.com. Again, we thank Blizzard Communications for this public service opportunity. We really appreciate the opportunity to put Colorado's great Northwest in the forefront. Good day.
Thanks for listening to Visit Moffat County, an informative show on everything that's going on in and around Moffat County, made possible by Blizzard Broadcasting and heard right here on KRAI Craig, 55 Country at 550 AM and 105.1 FM, and on KRAI FM at 102.3 and 93.7.